Any other questions? Yeah.
The binary tree, should it always have two successors?
Yes, so a binary tree is a tree where a node has either two successors or none. Being wrongly impressed by that question cost me an offer of a professorship that was worse than the one that I have now, so all well, but so there are people around who think that in a binary tree, a node could have one successor, but that's not possible. So in a binary tree, every node has either two or zero successors. Come again? What does it say exactly? Should memorize this better. There. Okay, it says every node, right? So that means interior nodes and leaves. Yeah, we're going to get to the binary tree example today, hopefully. So, yeah. More questions? Following some gentle prodding, I put the script online as far as it's done, or mostly done, or sort of underdone now. So basically the first chapter, the last end of it isn't reworked yet, but you can take guesses from what you see there, and close to finishing the first chapter, and then I'll replace that. But you can already look at it as it stands now. Yeah, right. Okay, let's try and recall where we left off at the last session. Laws for fold right. At some point in the last session, I think I decided to call fold right fold left because some people said this was standard in some programming language. Did I? I don't quite recall. Or did I keep writing fold right? Yeah, so right, so I looked it up in the Haskell library. Haskell library calls what we need fold right, so we'll keep code calling it fold right. In a way, that's the mnemonics are also easier this way around, because fold right means the bracketing comes from the right. So so basically, this is how fold right brackets the list elements. And I think this deserves the name fold right because it brackets to the right. So, the laws for fold right were completely parallel to the ones that we'd seen for the natural numbers. Basically, there was an identity law, which basically said we can program the identity as a fold, namely, the identity on the type list A is the fold. Precisely the right fold for the constructors themselves, nil and cons. Okay, so that's straightforward enough. I mean, what this does is it goes through the list and replaces every occurrence of cons by cons and every occurrence of nil by nil, so it does nothing. And there was the fusion rule, which I'm going to write as an implication between diagrams. Well, one equation, between one equation, one diagram, and another diagram. If we have a map K such that K of C equals C prime, where C and C prime are the correspondence of nil in some type for which we're defining a fold. And if, moreover, the following diagram commutes, a diagram that connects the H operation on C, the one that replaces the cons, with a similar operation H prime on D. And well, down here we have our map K, and up here, well, we have to just squint at it to see what we have to write there. Well, evidently, we have to write A times K. So if this diagram commutes and we have KC equals C prime, okay, that's notation. Yeah, okay. I'm going to do this all the time, so let's introduce the convention now. So I will very often write an object as in where a map is expected, and when I do that, then I mean the identity on that object. So it basically saves two letters. And it has more obvious typing, right? So, I mean, the diagrams look nicer. If this is A times something, then this should also be A times something. The morale is that eventually this thing is going to be a functor, and the functor should look the same on objects and on maps, basically. Okay, so if this diagram commutes, basically, then the corresponding diagrams of the folds also commutes, that is, we have fold C, H, which goes from list A to C, and we also have fold C prime H prime, which goes from list A to D, and if I insert the K here, then this commutes. And we have actually proved one of these laws, the non-trivial one, right? The fusion rule we have already set down and proved, basically. Okay, and we're going to look at some examples. The first concerns the length function, right? So we're going to prove that the length function commutes with the map operation. Of course, we expect this, right? When we apply the map operation to a list, which applies a fixed function to every element of the list, then the list that comes out should have the same length as the one that we started with. So formally, this means well, say we have two list types, list A and list B, and we have this map in between that we call list of F, which is the map operation for F, just in our idiosyncratic notation. And we have the length function on list A, which goes into the natural numbers, and of course we also have a length function on list B, and we claim that this commutes. Where are the folds? Where is K? gives me time to spoon out my milk foam. K should be list of F. But if I look at that diagram, then it doesn't quite match up, does it? Yeah. All right, so I mean, if I just want to prove this directly using the Friesian rule, of course, I mean, I might prove things less directly and then things might look totally different. But if I get the idea of proving this diagram or commutation of this diagram directly from the Friesian rule, then yeah, this here probably should be K. And then these two guys have to be identified as folds, and we've already done that, right? So length is a fold, as you said, right? So length is a fold of two rather obvious things, namely, well, nil gets replaced by zero, and well, on the right-hand side, we somehow must have successor. Okay, we get two arguments in this case, because the profile of these animals, h and h prime, is being a function of two arguments. And the first one, the list element, we don't really care about when we just look at the length of a list. So the full definition of this h here, is it the h? No, it's actually the h prime. So is, well, is suck composed with outright. And matching this to the Friesian rule again. No, red is wrong. It's just... So basically this here is the C prime and this here is the H prime. And we also introduce list of F as a fold, namely okay, list of F is a fold of two things that must give me, well, they should replace the constructors on list B. So the first of them is a constant, whatever comes out when I start with the empty list over A. Well, of course, then I get the empty list again, except that now this is the empty list over B. Okay, it's a matter of taste, of course, but things like Haskell will distinguish between no A and no B. So nil of type list A is different from nil of type list B, of course, called the same in both cases. Okay, and the second operation should replace the cons operation on list B. And that was a tiny bit complicated, but, well, actually it wasn't. So basically what it does, it just conses the right new element in front of the list that we already have, and the right new element, also the correct new element to put there, is the one that we get from the original list, A, but with F applied to it, so which way around? A on the left. So to the left-hand argument, we apply F. To the right-hand argument, we do nothing to begin with, and then we cons these two things. Okay, so that was our definition of list F. And now again, matching this to the names in the rule. This here is C. And this thing here is H. How high up can we go? Okay, and according to the rule, we have to check two things. So our k, in this case the length function, should transform this c into this c prime here. So, make this explicit, k of c, let's substitute what comes in here. That's length of what? Of nil. Well, length of nil was defined as zero. Well, actually, strictly speaking, and we're going to be more explicit about this in the next case, strictly speaking, I now use the fact that length is defined as a fold, namely the fold for zero and successor composed with outright. So if, given that I input nil, I'm now in the left case where I just get zero. So this is this step but I basically skipped. Okay, length nil is zero, which is exactly c prime. So that part works fine. Now the other part. It's fine to compute this kind of thing with elements in the calculation if you want to, right? So in order to show that the relevant square down there commutes in a case where you want to apply it, by all means, just plug in two elements and check that it comes out to the same thing in the bottom right corner. I'm now going to do this in an element-free fashion. It's going to look slightly monstrous. So let's do this diagram. Because it's more voluminous or takes up more space in the h direction than in the k direction, I'm going to flip it on the side, right? So I'm going to, what is this in this case, list A, right, is that correct? No, what are we proving? Something wrong here. Oh, no, it's okay. So one of our folds happens on list B. That's the one where we come from. And the other happens on the natural numbers. So here we have A times list B. And list B, so that's where the H runs. I'm going to leave some space here to make explicit what the H is. And the other fold is on the natural numbers. So our operation goes from A times naturals to naturals. That's the H prime. Okay, and here, here we have A times K, so in this case, A times length. And here, we just have length. So that's the diagram for which we have to show that it commutes. Okay, first thing we do, of course, is we plug in the definition of H and H prime. So the definition of H is seen here, right? Successor composed, no, this one. Cons composed with F times it. So let's do this. The intermediate object is B times list B. Here we have F times identity. And here we have cons. Okay, here's the H prime. H prime is successor composed with outright. So outright, of course, will go into the natural numbers. So here's outright. And here we have the successor operation. Okay. Now we can forget about the lower blackboard. All we need to do now is show that this inner bit commutes. Then, basically, we exploit that we know how f times identity is defined. In particular, we can look at its second component by applying outright. So, if we apply outright, then we end up in list B. And because this thing here does nothing on the right-hand components, its identity, we end up with a commuting triangle here. Well, this was originally a square that had list B in two corners and identity connecting it, and then we just pull this together into one object here. Okay, then, so basically, this here commutes by the definition of what f times identity is. Right, from here, I reach the natural numbers via the length function. And again, here I have A times length. So this thing here commutes by the definition of A times length. A times length was defined as making this square and a second one commute. So in particular, this one commutes. Right. Then, well, now I'm being sort of creative and I'm just going to invent a function. Namely, what is it? Well, it's not that creative because I already see most of this function here. I get the length function here. And I wonder what happens when I apply first outright, the right projection, and then the length function. Well, equivalently, of course, I can apply the length function to the right-hand component first and then project. So I get this function into B times the naturals, and I get outright. So again, this square commutes by the definition of B times length. So I'm stuck with one single part of this diagram yet to check. So once I check that this right-hand, pentagon commutes, I will have shown that the entire diagram commutes. Okay. At that point, I give up on the point freeness and I just calculate this element wise. So let's do it. So I have to show that the upper path is, so upper right path is equal to the lower left path, right? So I have to show something about length of cons of what? Cons B and L, where little b is an element of capital B and L is a list over B. And I have to compare this to what I get at the lower, on the lower path, which is successor of outright of B times length of B and L. Okay. Okay, this here is sort of the easy part. So, well, the other is easy too. Let's just do it. First of all, I can plug b and l into the function b times length. So this means nothing happens in the left-hand component, and on the right-hand component, I apply length. So this equals sec of what? Outright of b and length l. Okay. This is also easy. I can apply outright to a pair. I just take the right-hand component. So this is sec of length L. Okay, coming from the right-hand side, I'll stop there and just look at the other bit instead. So length of cons BL. Well, now I have to remember that length is a fold. So let's make this explicit. So this is length of, not length, fold right of, well, something that I don't care about, and this function down here, there it is, successor composed with outright. Of cons BL. Okay, now I can apply my recursive definition of fold right. Okay, what does fold right do? It applies this function here to the pair consisting of the B and fold right recursively called on the L. So this equals successor of outright of B and, okay, because the full length of the fold right definition will not fit this part of the blackboard anymore, I'll just revert to length directly. So length of L. And, well, because outright of this pair is length L, magically this equals the thing that we got from the other side. Exercise. Convert this into point free style. All right, I'll give you one hint that we need here, namely the point free definition of fold right, of course. So fold right of C and H composed with cons equals what? Equals H composed with identity times fold right CH, right? This is the one clause of the recursive definition of fold in point free style. Is this correct? It is. Just a moment. Take some distance H. Yeah, that's it. All right. Not very well posed, is it? So all right, has somebody seen why the question is actually a bit stupid? Yep. Right, so one is the second clause of the recursive definition of fold, right? So one commutes because, actually let's actively remove all this calculation here. So this pentagon here is the recursive definition of the respective fold, right? It said, well, now I've wiped it on the left-hand side, but it says, right, this recursive definition says, if I apply my length function to cons, then what I get is the length function applied to, recursively applied, basically, to the thing under the cons, the list under the cons. The left-hand part, so the element that I cons is just dropped by the outright, and then I form the successor. So this is exactly the recursive definition of the length function. Okay. Sorry? Well, of fold right in this instance, of course, right? I mean, because this here, well, basically this here is the which one the H, right? Is it? Well, not the H, but the, I mean, these are two different length functions. So this is the, what, H double prime, if you will, right? So the map that appears in the definition of the right-hand length function, the length function on B as a fold. Good. And there's a second example. So let's imagine we have a sum function from lists of naturals to the naturals. So basically, we want to just sum over the list. Which, of course, we can write as a fold, namely, pretty sure it's written that way in Haskell in the libraries. So you could just look it up. Yeah. 0, plus. Note in this case the type here that we want to reach with the fold function is the same as the type of list entries. So in this case, our profile for the things that we have to give to the fold as parameters is C must be a natural number, and H goes from type of entries, naturals, times the type that I want to go to, again the naturals, to the type that I want to reach, namely the naturals, right? So in this case, plus does nicely, right? Okay, so that's the sum operation. And let's recall that we had defined this multiplication operation, multiplication by M, which was also a fold, namely, okay, case for 0 is 0, and what's the other one? This was a fold on the naturals. So in this case, we only need a unary function in this case, plus M. Okay. So what we're going to prove is distributivity. How do I phrase distributivity using these functions? Of course, distributivity now, not just over binary sums, but distributivity over arbitrary finite sums, right? Of course, I want to say that multiplying by M will distribute over summing a list. Yeah.
By M of sum of list.
Yes.
M mapped
So it's a commutative diagram, basically, right? So let's fill in the types. Here we have lists of naturals, here as well. And here we have naturals, same here. OK, so we want to prove that this commutes. So as in element full fashion, if I take M and multiply a sum over elements xi with it, then this is the same as first multiplying all the elements by M and then summing them up. OK. Yeah, in this case, I mean, this thing doesn't really look like a triangle, right? So we're going to be have to do this separately, right? So we're going to treat the two ways through the diagram, top right and bottom left, separately, and basically apply the fusion rule two times. Well, maybe we can sort of identify a fold here, right? So if we're lucky, we can write this here as for reasons of nomenclature that I introduce elsewhere, let's assume that this is already C prime H prime. So question is, can we write that middle bit in the form fold of C prime and H prime? Okay, what does it do? Well, in both cases, of course, it forms this sum here, right? So what could it be? What would C prime be? Empty list.
Zero.
Zero, right? If I perform any of these operations with the empty list, then I sum over nothing, I get zero, and multiply it by M. So C prime is certainly zero. So what is H prime of, so let's write this in element-wise fashion first, so what does H prime get? Well, again, a natural number and another natural number, right? So it gets a natural number because that's the type of entries, and it gets another natural number because that's where we want to go. So let's say, should call them X and Y, right? Both natural numbers. So what should that be? Let's write it element-wise first, and then convert it.
X plus M of Y.
X plus M times Y. Careful, this basically here is the thing that accumulates. Then the other way around, right? So M times X plus Y, right? So basically, I start with zero, and every time I see a list entry, I multiply it with X and add it to what I already have. I mean, fair enough, right? Okay, so this is our guess for the diagonal. And okay, now we can basically apply the fusion law twice, right? Let's just wipe this. Right, so we have to check a few things. First of all, start off with this guy here, column number one. Okay, so in this case, the K that we're looking at is multiplication with M. And we have to check, first of all, that everything is fine with the constants. So we should check that mult M applied to the constant in the full definition of sum, which is the guy up here, so to zero. This should equal the C prime. Well, fine, right? Mult M of zero is zero. And C prime is also zero. Okay, and then we have to check that a diagram commutes. Okay, so this diagram has the H from the definition of sum, so this is plus. Let's put this here. So we have plus as a binary map on the naturals. And the H prime that we have is here, right? So this is, again, a binary map on the naturals. And we have to check that our K makes this commute. So we have, well, we have mult m down here, and now, of course, when all the types are the same, it's suddenly possible to make mistakes, right? So well-typed programs don't go wrong, but that's not true if everything has the same type. So if you concentrate, the k goes to the right-hand factor, right? So it's naturals times mult m, so identity in the left component, multiplication in the right. Okay. So this is now no longer a question about lists, it's just a question about natural numbers. So I'm going to just do it element-wise, assuming that we have already proved everything about the natural numbers in exercises on fold n. So what we have to check is that, well, h prime of nut times mult m of a pair of natural numbers in X and Y, well, we can just calculate what that is because we have all definitions. This is H prime of X and M times Y, which by our definition of H prime is just M times X plus M times Y. We do already know distributivity on the naturals, and in fact, that was one of the examples that we did for fold n, right? So here we get m of x plus y, which, as it happens, is just what we get on the bottom left-hand path, right? So this is mult m of, well, let's be, let's use funny notation. This is mult m of plus of x and y. So it's exactly what we get along the lower path. Right, so this proves that one commutes. What the hell am I doing there? Okay. So there's our second triangle to check, number two. Okay, again, we have to check that the constants are transformed correctly. Okay, in this case, RK is actually the sum operation, right? So K equals sum. Okay, and we have to check that K applied to the constant for this definition here. Well, this is the, well, it's wiped away now, but recall that this here had nil basically in its left-hand component. So this is looking at K of nil. Well, K of nil, because K is the sum operation, is zero, which is exactly our C prime. So that part works. And now the diagram. Okay. What's our diagram? So on the left-hand side, we have our H prime. No, we don't. We have the H for this definition here. Okay, so that's a map from our type of entries, natural numbers, times the type where we want to go to, lists of naturals, to two lists of naturals, and we recall that this was basically cons of f times it. So we have f times identity here and cons here, and the f in this case, is multiplication with m, so multiplication with m times identity. This goes into, again, naturals times lists of naturals. Okay, so this is our H. And on the other side, we have the H prime, which we have to look up, right? So the H prime goes from natural numbers times natural numbers into the natural numbers. Down here, we have the sum operation. And up here, we have natural numbers times the sum operation. Okay. Having invested this, I better check I'm not going wrong here. No, fine. Okay, so we have to check that this commutes. Okay, let's try and stay element free for a little while longer. Here we have sum composed with cons. So, like in the other example, this is the recursive case in the definition of sum. Okay, and what does it do? So basically what it does is it calls sum recursively on the right-hand component and then adds the left-hand component, right? So this is identity times sum, which goes to naturals times naturals. And here we have plus. Okay. Here, do we want to say it like that? Okay, so what we do here is we apply mult m to the left component, leaving the right-hand component alone. And then we apply sum to the right-hand component, leaving the left-hand component alone. Evidently, that's the same as doing it the other way around, because the components are completely independent. So we could just as well first apply sum to the right-hand component and then apply mult m to the left-hand component. So this here, well, right now I'm saying it evidently commutes. So we can, right now we can check element-wise that it does commute, because the overall effect of both paths is to apply mult m to the left component and sum to the right component. So this here equals, I can actually write the diagonal. This here equals mult m times sum. We will later see when we arrive at the general categorical theory that this holds for very general reasons. We can prove it without knowing that we're talking about elements. Okay, so for a moment, we just accept that this thing here evidently commutes and can check it element-wise. Okay, so we're basically left with showing that this triangle here commutes. And this triangle here commutes by definition, right? So, no, this is number three, right? This triangle here is exactly the definition of H prime. What does it tell me? It says, take two natural numbers, multiply the left one with M, and then add them. That's what H prime does. And actually, the suggestion was to write H prime in this way in the first place, right? So this was what we were saying. So. Okay, so that finishes the proof of our distributive law, right? Who would have thought that this is so much science? Okay, now for the last bit that, is not exactly needed for solving the exercise on the sheet, but which is maybe sort of helpful for solving the exercise on the sheet, namely, our last example, data type binary trees, well, slightly different type of binary trees than the one that shows up on the sheet with regard to the labeling. Okay, so again, this is going to be a parameterized and recursive data type. So it depends on a type A of, well, things that we're going to want to label the nodes with, so the data that we actually want to store in the tree. And it's going to be recursive, of course. And it's going to have two constructors. One that we call leaf, which takes an argument of type A. So this basically tells us that at the leaves, we store data from A. Okay, now, different from the type that you see on the exercise sheet, we don't store anything at the interior nodes. So the interior nodes just branch. So, and they branch in a binary fashion. That's why they're called binary trees. So this constructor bin here for binary branching takes two arguments. Which are both of type 3A. Again, let's make this explicit. This declares two constructors. The first one, the leaf constructor, goes from A to tree A. And the binary branching constructor bin goes from tree A times tree A to tree A. Has everybody copied the diagram? Because I'd like to wipe it. Okay. Okay, now the usual, right? All this is meant to look repetitive, right? So we appreciate that starting from the next session, we're going to develop methods that save us all this repetition. We're going to define a fold operation on these trees. What parameters is this fold operation going to have? Right, so it's going to have two parameters, let's call them F and G, where F goes from A to C, mirroring what leaf does, just replacing tree of A with C, and G goes from C times C to C, again mirroring what the binary branching operator does. And of course, we're going to have the usual definition, the usual recursive definition of what this function actually does, right? So, fold T F and G of leaf of little a. Well, it does the usual, right? It replaces the constructor with the function that I've provided for this. So, this is what's named f of a. And similarly, fold T of f, g applied to bin of, shall we call trees S and T, will replace this bin constructor here with the g. So this is going to be g of something. But now, of course, I can't apply to S and T directly because those have the wrong type. So instead, as usual, I perform a recursive call. It's going to be somewhat lengthy now. Fold T of F and G applied to S, and a second recursive call, fold T of F, G applied to T. Okay. Let's do some examples. For instance, a size function that does what?
Multiplies.
a size function that counts the number of leaves. That would be fold t of what? Now first I need a function that converts any element of my parameter type A into a natural number. Zero of what? Zero of sac.
Sac of zero.
Sac of zero, or one, basically, right? Yeah. I mean, yeah, we haven't defined one, but one would, of course, be defined as sac of zero. And okay, more precisely, constant map for one, so one back. And what do we do in the recursive case?
Plus,
right? We look at a tree that has two subtrees. We have counted the leaves here. We also have already counted the leaves here to count the overall number of leaves we just added. How would this differ if I want to count not the number of leaves, but the number of nodes? Yes. So let's call this L size and N size. So here, size measured in terms of number of leaves. Here, measured in terms of overall number of nodes. That would be the same thing, but here we put suck composed with plus, meaning we also count one for every time we need an interior node. Right. No, this is meant to count the interior nodes and the leaves.
I understand only the.
Okay, that we could do as well, right? We could also count only the interior nodes. In this case, we would replace this with zero bang, thus not counting the leaves. But no, here I meant all nodes, leaves and interior nodes.
Okay, then I understand.
Yeah. Okay. Next thing we could think of would be a function that flattens a tree. Well, by flattening, I mean just give up the tree structure and give me back all the leaves as a list. So tree A to list of A. Of course, I also have a definite order in the list in mind, namely just leaves from left to right. Okay, so this is also a fold, namely of what? That becomes the first map is a tiny exercise in point free writing, right? So of course, one would know immediately what to do if one is allowed to use points, right? Then, what I have to do, I get an element of the type A, which is the thing that I find at the leaf, and I have to produce a list from that. Well, obviously, I just take the singleton list that contains only that element. How do I write this in point-free fashion? Cons, comma, cat. Well, don't quite know what comma. So just cons as the first argument. I think that doesn't quite have the right type. Right. Precisely, right? So I have to give cons two arguments, basically, right? So cons wants to consume a pair. What pair do I produce? Well, I produce the element that I get as the first argument, which I want to cons to something, and I want to produce a singleton list, so the list that I cons it with should be empty. So this should be nil, but in order to turn it into a map, a constant map, I write nil bang. Okay, so that's the first argument, cons of identity and nil bang. And the second one, I think that's what I just heard, right? Cat, right? So cat. The function that we've seen in the list example, which just appends to list. Okay. And we have a function tree f from tree A to tree B, given a map F from A to B. Which we can also write as a fold. Okay, let's think about this for a moment. First of all, we have to produce a tree of type B given an element of type A. Well, of course, we just apply F to that element to get something of type B, and then compose this with leaf, of course, the leaf constructor of B. And secondly, we basically get two trees over B that we have already, that we have already obtained from two trees of type A and want to form a tree of type B out of them. Well, that means we just apply bin here. Okay. So this is our fold examples, and now for the fusion law. Well, again, or first the identity rule. Well, again, it tells us we can program the identity on trees as a fold, namely as fold T applied to the constructors, leaf and bin. This should by now be clear. And And we have the fusion rule. The fusion rule will now properly demand commutation of two diagrams because both the constructors are actual maps. So say we have maps F and F prime going into C and D, and we have a map K here that makes this commute. And also, we have this binary H from C times C to C, and correspondingly, well, it's wasteful. Similarly, we have H prime, a binary operation D. And, well, the obvious diagram that I can draw commutes, what do I draw up here? What's this error? K times K. Right, I just apply K in both arguments. So, if these two things both commute, then, again, the corresponding folds commute, so both start at tree A. The one for F and G goes into C. The one for F prime and C prime, G prime goes into D. And here we have K, and the whole thing commutes. So in this case, everything literally as before. And as an example of that, easy one, basically we show that the leaf size of a tree is the length of what I get by flattening. Well, let's check the two diagrams, right? Okay, of course, this year the length function is going to be RK. And L size and flatten are folds on trees. Okay, L size has probably disappeared, so let's remember what it did. L size had basically one bang. As that's the it's this one though, okay, had one bang as the part for leaves, so this goes into the naturals, and flatten goes into lists, and it did cons composed with. We still have it up there, it, comma, nil, bang, and we have the length function down here. Okay, we pursue this, right? So the length function is now looking at a singleton list. So it takes a bit of calculation with that involves unfolding the definition of the length function twice, right? Because we have to consume the cons and the nil. So we have two steps in the recursive calculation of length. But of course, since we implemented length correctly, right, of course, the result will be one if we put in a singleton list. So this commutes fine. And the other bit, so here we have the binary operation that we used for the fill definition of flatten, which was just cat. And then there's the binary operation on the naturals that we used in the definition of size or L size. And that was just plus. And here we have length times length, and down here we have length. And we have to show that this commutes. We haven't shown it yet, so there, I mean, of course we can see it, right? If we concatenate two lists, then their length is the sum of the component lists. Of course, now this would have to be shown again, using things that we know about lists. So I'll stop here and say, okay, we can prove this because it's no longer a problem about trees. It's a problem about lists, and we would solve it using the fusion law for lists, basically. Okay, and that's it for today. Are there any questions? Wait, which one? Ah, not H, but we call them G, right? So this here was, thanks. G and G prime, obviously. Thanks. More questions?
One about the homework. Neil isn't a tree then.
Sorry?
Is Neil a tree?
Neil is not a tree, no, in this case. So it would be a leaf, but a leaf would have to have a label, basically, right? Okay.